RSN Summer Breakfast Club with Andrew Mays and Bryce McGain.
Time to head stateside. Greg Orman joins us from the Tampa Bay Report. He's a Tampa Bay reporter for The Athletic. He joins us on the line to talk about Tom Brady and this incredible fairy tale that keeps on going. Greg, good morning to you and welcome to RSN 927.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Hope you guys are doing well.
We're going well. Not so well because we're both Packers fans in here, so it was a bit of a setback on Monday morning Australian time. But how's Tampa Bay going at the moment? I'm sure Super Bowl fever was always going to be big, but to have the team, the host city, have their team play for the first time in history, it must just take on a whole extra level.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't even imagine. The excitement, obviously, the pandemic takes some of the edge off of it. But, no, super excited to have this year. It's going to be a tough ticket, an expensive ticket for anybody that wants to go, but a lot of excitement for the next 2 weeks around the big game here in town.
It was pretty exciting last weekend with the winners and losers. Obviously, the incredible story of Tom Brady and getting to his 10th Super Bowl. Was it a dream that was getting realized throughout the year that there is an actual chance of this going to happen as he took on the Buccaneers and took them all the way through?
Yeah, I think there's always been the possibility. If Tom Brady is your quarterback, it's certainly something you're capable of. But, you know, you look back and, you know, 4 games left in the regular season, they're 7-5. They're barely in the playoffs. So neat to see how well they've come together over these last 7 games and 7 wins to put themselves here.
What has clicked since that time? I heard Tom Brady talking about that post-game, and he said, you know, essentially that's where they were, and what did he put it down to for the team clicking at this important time of the season?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just guys connecting and finding each other and getting more fluent in this offense and where everyone's supposed to be. They've definitely clicked at a whole nother level. Offensively, especially, defense is kind of up and down, but the offense, you know, is scoring at a much higher clip. They're moving the chain, getting the run-pass balance. They've just done a lot of things to make things easier to set yourself up to win.
It's going to be an epic Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs are, well, they should be going in as favorites, but I guess the hometown levels things out. How do you see it playing out, and what are the big areas that the Buccaneers need to do to tame the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are the favorites and probably should be. They're the defending champs, have certainly played at a very high level all season. You know, these two teams met up in the regular season, and the Chiefs just dominated early in the game, 17-0 after one quarter. Whether it's the Bucs adjusting or the Chiefs taking their foot off the gas, it certainly got to be a much closer game and ended up a 3-point victory. But I think any success for the Bucs has to start with being able to defend that offense, to kind of keep Patrick Mahomes in the pocket and contain some of the speed that they have that's so dangerous.
And the run game, that's with the Buccaneers, that's something that's been a little different. It's not all just about Tom Brady. He's happy to hand the ball off and just keep, well, they call it often, pounding the rock.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, the more you run, the less you have Tom Brady throwing the ball in a Super Bowl. So it sounds silly, but they really like the idea of keeping defenses guessing, of having to run to set up the pass. They've gotten good contributions from Leonard Fournette and from Ronald Jones. Obviously they're going to try and do things to keep the Chiefs guessing, but I think it'll be a lot of both.
Greg, you mentioned the build-up is going to be slightly different with the COVID restrictions at the moment. Just how different is Super Bowl week going to be? I mean, it's known, of course, for all the parties and the activations that are in and around the city itself. What's going to be different this year?
Very different. You know, obviously, the Super Bowl media day, that's always a big event, will be entirely online and
right,
virtual and done by Zoom. So not nearly what it normally is. You know, all the parties and the peripheral events, they are going to have the Super Bowl experience outdoors, which makes it a little easier to get larger numbers there without putting them at risk of spreading or putting anybody else at a health risk. I don't think they'll be nearly the same in terms of the parties, you know, that we think of being around the Super Bowl. I think they'll have events that will be carefully social distanced. I think the league in particular, their events, they're going to be very careful to make sure this isn't seen as something that would result in a huge amount of positive cases spreading here in Tampa and to everywhere people go back to from this game.
Greg, have a brilliant couple of weeks. We're very jealous. It's one of my bucket list items to do, to get to a Super Bowl one day. Obviously, it won't be this year, but hopefully in the next 5 or 10 years we can make it happen. All the best for the next couple of weeks. Enjoy the build-up.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care. Enjoy the game.
Greg Allman there joining us from over there in Tampa Bay, a reporter for The Athletic. It's going to be a very different build-up. I didn't actually think about the media day, which we see so many clips of throughout the week, with just
all players available.
Yep.
Yeah.
For about 2 hours, just the all-ins. You can go and interview any player you want, ask them any question you want, and that's completely off, all online, which is going to be a very, very different experience this year. But every precaution must be made, that's for sure, considering what has gone on over the last little while. Just a bit of live sport at the moment as well. A couple of Premier League games underway at the moment. Newcastle 1, Leeds United 2. There's 5 minutes left in that clash. So Leeds looking for a win away from home there. And West Ham are leading Crystal Palace 3-1 at Palace as well. So good result so far for West Ham. There's a couple of minutes left there to go before full time. So, yeah, we'll give you those final scores in about 10 minutes' time. A little later on this morning, Manchester City play West Brom and Arsenal play Southampton. So a couple of big games there. Hopefully we get to see Matt Ryan soon for Arsenal, the Socceroos goalkeeper who made the switch from Brighton. So a good story for him over the weekend. He's the backup and reserve keeper. So hopefully we don't want to wish injury upon anyone, but you never know.
Good to see him out there, of course.
Yeah, and he grew up supporting Arsenal as a kid too. So, yeah, nice result for Matt Ryan. Hopefully he can get some regular first-team football there. Now, Greg Dyer is about to join us very shortly, the Australian Cricketers Association chairman, because the news that came through a couple of days ago is that they have appointed the Todd Greenberg as their new CEO, which is a fascinating appointment, and he joins us now to chat a little bit more about it. Greg, good morning to you and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning. How are you?
We're going very well. First of all, what were you looking for the new CEO of the Australian Cricketers Association?
The primary requirement is that it's somebody that can live the principle, live the culture, live the values of the Australian Cricketers Association. We, you know, those are the most important things, and we like to think that we run all of our decision making through those value sets. And so, it's a very important element of the role of the CEO that they live those values, cultures, and such. So, that was the most important thing. But then beyond that, of course, we're looking for somebody who can take the organisation forward, provide great leadership, and really work with the players very, very closely to form great working relationships with CA, the state associations and the like. So a relationship person is also, you know, very, very high on the list. Communication, obviously, you know, the ability to articulate the issues and talk to people and have that public sort of facing element to what they do. So we think we've got all of those skill sets and qualities in the CEO that we've found.
How important is a background in cricket or an understanding of the game in these sorts of roles? Because we see numerous backgrounds appointed across different sports, but for cricket especially, how important was it to have a knowledge of the game and junior development levels and all that sort of stuff coming through the ranks?
Look, I think that's really important because there's an ever-growing need for connection to grassroots from elite sport. I think we've kind of lost our way a little bit in some of our elite sports in terms of that connection with grassroots. And so I think a knowledge of where the skills and the basics of cricket are developed, I think, is a really important thing. Todd, of course, didn't play cricket at first class level, but he played at a very high level for a long period of time, and has a good knowledge of where the game roots are. I think that's really important. It gives a sort of common language to use with players, even at the first class level. I think it's important, but not an absolute. It was a really nice to have with Tom.
Greg, good morning to you. What's the biggest challenge facing cricket in Australia at the moment?
Ooh, that's a broad question. I think the biggest issue, wow. I think we've got a long way to go still with our gender equity, and I think the playing systems and the development pathways and so forth for the women need to be expanded upon significantly. We've done a really good job in cricket, and here in Australia in particular, and I think we're arguably world leading in terms of the way in which our gender equity is a real part of the game. But there's still such a long way to go. The women at the moment are probably where I was, frankly, when I played, still trying to struggle to maintain a second life, if you like, away from cricket, while there's a high degree of professionalism required in what they're doing. So they train almost as full-timers, and yet they're still being paid effectively as part-time. So there's a long way to go there. And look, I think culturally and governance-wise, I still think there's a fair way to go with the way in which the game is run and administered. Yeah.
How is the relationship with Cricket Australia? It seems really strained previously in terms of the MOU negotiations and coming to terms. It seemed to be poles apart. How's that relationship now? And is that an important part for Todd Greenberg to take charge of?
Yeah, we've certainly had our moments, haven't we? it's been a sort of an up and down relationship. I've got to say, at the moment, it's much stronger. I think perhaps almost than it's ever been. So that's a really good thing. We look for someone in our new CEO who was going to be able to develop relationships further at a real operational level. And so what we've got here is somebody who's senior enough to really, you know, take it to CA in terms of those important negotiations and discussions, but who's genuinely there on a level and with a deep understanding of the way in which sports need to be administered, and with a high degree of acceptance that here's somebody who's at the same level, if you like, in terms of those conversations. So we will be saying to Todd, and have already in fact saying to Todd, that the relationship with CA is so important, and we want to work hard at it to make sure that relationship manifests itself in a really strong working relationship, and that there's a stronger partnership between the players and the administrators going forward as a result.
Greg Dyer's joined us, the Australian Cricket Association chairman. Greg, I wanted to ask a little bit further on that point, the scheduling and how much of a barrier that's going to be, obviously, with the current COVID-19 crisis going on around the world, but more importantly, from a player's perspective, the mental health aspect. And we've seen a number of players go home in bubbles and struggle with it at times. How much of a challenge is that going to be for Todd over the next sort of 18 months, 2 years? But also, from a cricketer's perspective, how much influence do you have, or how much of a voice do you have in the negotiations that Cricket Australia would be having with different cricketing organisations around the world about the schedule itself?
We're not directly involved in those conversations, obviously. And yes, it is a problem. As this thing wears on, the time away from home and so forth is going to begin to become more and more problematic. So I think we need to think about how we can maybe have some time away, if you like, some time in release from all of the protocols, because it will gradually wear down, and that will be a case-by-case example or case-by-case requirement. Each player will have different needs, both at a personal, social and a mental level. So we're going to have to watch it really, really carefully. It's already, spent a long time in isolation, if you like. And the protocols do need to be exceptionally strong and well administered and executed, and that's, I guess, what we're concerned about. Safety is probably highest priority, but then there's all of those other elements that you're looking at. It's a really vexed issue. It's going to wear on and wear down. So we need to really think about the support level that are provided to players, and as they try and potentially think about some time away. So that might mean that squads are larger and people need to be released for a time being to make sure that they come back, and when they're in the bubble and playing and on full action, there as well as they can be every day.
Greg, all the best with Todd at the helm as CEO. Very much looking forward to talking to him over the journey from a player's point of view. And thanks for your time on RSN 927 this morning.
Not at all. Good talk.
One of the great stories that we've been able to follow over the last 12 months has been Thomas Randall, who is a young Supercars aspirant. We hope that he can make the big time and spend plenty of time at the elite level. But an amazing story after he went through cancer treatment last year. He had a little bit more at the end of last year when we spoke to him. And then he's come out yesterday, Bryce, and he's won. One of the first events back, he joins us on the line. I'm sure he's got a huge smile on his face this morning. Thomas, good morning and welcome back to RSN 927.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me back again.
I didn't think you'd be winning anything this quickly. How did it feel to be on top of the podium yesterday down at Simmons Plains?
Yeah, look, I reckon if you had asked me to hop in one of these cars 3 weeks ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to sit in it. So it was pretty phenomenal. Still sort of pinching myself a bit, just, you know, I was thinking 3 or 4 weeks ago about trying to just get to this event. So to have been there was a massive privilege, and to win the John McCormick Cup in the end was pretty phenomenal. But yeah, I just got to thank all my family, you know, for all their support, my friends, the team BRM, and all my supporters on the car, and my personal supporters and sponsors for sticking by me. It's bloody awesome, to be honest.
It was amazing watching it yesterday. Good to see it on Channel 7 too, which was brilliant. Now, in terms of your treatment through December and before Christmas, take us through what you went through. And you said you didn't even think you'd be in the car 3 weeks ago. What have you gone through over the last couple of months?
Yeah, so I got back from the Bathurst 1000, which was sort of mid to late October last year, and then we sort of got stuck straight into it, so had to do a few more CT scans, and then about the middle of November, I had my second operation. My first one was at the start of 2020, and then that was sort of a complex abdominal surgery. It was about a 7-hour operation. I haven't done any ab work in about 9 to 10 weeks, so I was a bit worried how that was going to go in the car. But yeah, after the operation, they sort of said, "Look, we're probably just going to have to do a bit of chemo just to make sure it never returns," which was, I think, was the right decision. I got stuck into that early December, and then I finished my last day of chemotherapy was on New Year's Day. So the next sort of week and a half, I was feeling pretty rough. Just was like a couch potato, and we were in contact with the guys that run S5000 and that run the championship, because they really wanted us on the grid, and I really wanted to be there. But at that point, I was I couldn't really do much. I couldn't even walk the dog. So it was really amazing how quickly I was actually able to sort of get back on my feet. And my PT Heath Meldrum really sort of helped me out as well. We got to do got a few sessions in before the round, and it was just great to get back in that car. I didn't really know how I was going to go. I was looking like a beetroot after the first race on Monday, and I was feeling like a bloody beetroot. But yesterday it was a bit cooler, and after winning the race, I was able to save up a little bit of energy. So as you normally do after winning a race, but got to thank everyone for all their support. It's great.
Well, Thomas, we feel a bit guilty calling you at this hour. You should be sleeping in and getting a good rest. But it's quite a phenomenal story, and you've gone into so much detail there. And driving a car is really physically demanding, so you must be feeling really drained today.
Well, look, the S5000 those open wheels that we were driving, they are very physical to drive. There's no power steering. They weigh about 900, 950 kilos, so they're quite heavy for an open wheeler or a wings and splits car. And Simmons Plains, it's the race track. It might be short, but it's extremely busy. And there's no right-hand corners, pretty much, except for, like, the little kink into turn one. Every corner is a left-hander. So, yeah, by the end of that first race, my arms were just hanging on for dear life. And they were quite long races, so 25-lap races. And the last race, there were no safety cars. So, yeah, it was pretty tough. And I think now I've sort of got a bit of a baseline that I know how I responded in the car. That was another reason why I wanted to go down there, just to see if I could actually, you know, hang on. And so there's a lot we can work on now with my, you know, cardio, endurance, and my strength, because all that, you know, really got knocked around after having to go through all that treatment. You're at like a top level of fitness, and then you go through all that and you just get put right back down. So you sort of got to restart all that, but we've got a lot of time now, which is good.
So what's next on the agenda for you, Thomas?
So the next round of the S5000 is late February, which is at Phillip Island. Mm-hmm. So that'll be once again on Channel 7. And then we've got the Bathurst 1000 I'll be doing as a co-driver with Sixford Racing at the end of the middle or late in the year. So I'll be looking forward to that. And like I said, I've got a bit of time yet to get physically prepared for that. So, yeah, should be good.
Oh, fantastic. You're one of the best stories over the last 12 months. Hey, quick one for you, because we were talking about petrol and my gauge was on about 5 kilometres and I've got about a 15-kilometre trip into work. Now, as a supercar driver, if your petrol gauge is on 5 k's left and you've got a 20 k trip, do you risk it? Do you go for it and think you might break down halfway through, or are you very conservative and you'll fill the petrol up before you start?
Well, it depends. If you know your car well, then you might get away with it. But if you don't know your car, look, I'd probably fill up, especially if you're on the freeway. I mean, the Monash Freeway, as you know, doesn't have many petrol stations around, does it?
No. But we do drive in at about 4 a.m. in the morning, so there's not a lot of traffic, which was good. Well, Zabido, I made it, which was good news for everyone. Hey, Thomas, all the best over the next couple of months. Looking forward to seeing you back in action down at Phillip Island. It's just a fantastic story. And as I said, it was great to watch you yesterday. Well done.
Thanks, guys.
Time to talk a little bit of Big Bash now. It was a dramatic day yesterday, but I tell you, he would have been very happy. The head of the Big Bash, Alistair Dobson, who joins us on the line. Alistair, good morning to you.
Morning, guys. Great to speak to you.
Could you have written the last day and the schedule any better than what you did with every game live right down to the very last?
Oh, I don't reckon we could have. It was certainly an amazing day with 7 of the 8 teams still in the mix and all 3 games essentially going down to the wire to determine the final. So, yeah, from a scheduling point of view, worked out exactly as we'd hoped, and it was definitely a great day.
How successful have the double and triple headers been? Because Bryce and I have been talking about it for much of the morning. We've had a lot of SMS feedback as well from our listeners. Everyone really enjoys them, and especially when they don't go over time and they're played on time. It seems to be a really nice lead-in, always watching through the afternoon into the evening game.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of the challenging schedule we had this year around hubs and the way we had to schedule the season was more double headers and then a triple header for the first time yesterday. I think we've learnt that, you're right, that they do create an amazing day of cricket, whether it's an afternoon game into a night game on a weekend or, as you said, yesterday's triple header. It was something we'll definitely look at in the future as a way to culminate the season.
Is that something you're looking to work out, Alistair, is to condense it a little bit more rather than having it to roll into February, which it is at the moment, the final's on the 6th of February. Is there a goal to trim maybe a week or two off the overall schedule of the Big Bash?
Oh, look, I think scheduling is one of the real challenging parts of every cricket season. It is largely dependent on the international schedule. So for next season, obviously with an Ashes summer, there's a fair bit of cricket being planned. But look, we certainly hope or aim each year to finish the regular season at least within the school holiday period, which we've done this year. And I think that's a great way to finish and then a couple of weekends into February for finals. But every year looks a little bit different. But, yeah, obviously, the as much as we can fit in the school holidays is always our objective.
How have the numbers been in terms of the eyeballs watching and tuning in as well? Have the numbers been up this year, or are they consistent?
Yeah, they've been consistent this year, and obviously, you know, we've had things like the double headers and triple headers have created different opportunities for people to watch, and we even played a morning game this year before one of the days of day-night test cricket coverage. So lots of different time slots that we've been able to try and great audiences throughout. And certainly the cricket's been amazing and continue to draw people back to their TVs. And in even more pleasingly, able to get a lot of people to the games this year, which perhaps a few months back we didn't think was going to be possible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been a great result. One of the things we're really proud of here at RSN 927 is going all over Victoria, and we've got stacks of country listeners who will be listening right at this very moment, Alistair. In terms of, I know it's been difficult this year with COVID protocols, but in the future, is that something you're looking to do as well, perhaps take the game regionally a little bit more? We saw that with the Stars a couple of times heading to Maui. Is that something you're looking at in the future?
Yeah, I think one of the great things about the BBL in the last couple of seasons is taking games into regional areas, whether that's, you know, Maui with the Stars or Coffs Harbour with the Sixers, and other clubs going around. So, you know, if the situation allows, we'll certainly be hoping to get back to a fair bit of that next season. Obviously, it's been one of the great parts about sort of the expansion of the BBL in the last couple of years is those games can be taken regionally and can connect with, you know, even more fans.
And Alistair, the broader strategy, not just looking at this year, is the broader strategy to maybe bring in a couple more franchises? There's been talk also of maybe a New Zealand team coming across and giving a different flavour to the Big Bash. Is that something on the agenda?
Oh, it's not on the agenda so much in the short term. I think, you know, we've got eight clubs that are still, even though we've been around for a while, they're only 10 years old and still establishing, you know, their footprint, if you like, with fans around Australia. There's no immediate plans for expansion. That said, I think one of the things we've shown this year with the BBL is we've always, you know, keen to innovate and try new things and never rest on our laurels in the sense of continuing to grow the game. So if that changes, you know, I think there'll be opportunities to discuss it. But right now we've got, you know, eight teams that are going well and a competition that's been really successful this year.
Alistair Dobson has joined us, the head of the Big Bash League. Now, I wanted to ask you about the rule changes that were brought in this year. Obviously, we were focused on a lot yesterday, being Melbourne people at the MCG. How have you found the innovations like the Bash Boost and the X Factor?
Oh, I think overall they've been great additions. We, you know, obviously when we introduced them, there was a lot of debate, and I think we'll review them in great detail post-season with players and coaches and fans and other stakeholders. But I think as an initial observation, you know, we think they've certainly served their purpose. I think the Bash Boost came into its own yesterday, particularly in the last week of the competition when it became clear that every single point was going to count. So I think that created another element of drama yesterday. And obviously the power surge, I think from day one, has created, you know, a really different look at strategy and kept games alive and interesting. And then the X Factor, I think, you know, has been used probably about as much as we thought it would, with I reckon from memory about 10 or 15 times, and that's been really interesting. I know the Hurricanes activated it yesterday. So I think overall, you know, the innovations we introduced have largely served their purpose. We'll have a look and them at the end of the season, and if there's other things we want to do, other things we can introduce to keep the games as exciting as possible, we'll certainly do that.
What is the... I'm interested in sort of a philosophical question in terms of the aim of the Big Bash. Is it to develop players for the Australian team? Is it entertainment, or is it to create one of the best, if not the best, T20 league in the world?
Yeah, look, ultimately, it's a combination of those three things. If you had to put one at the top, the Big Bash has always been... And still is purpose is to connect with new fans, and that's families and kids and people, introducing people to cricket for the first time, and it's been incredibly successful at that, and that's still unashamedly our number one purpose, and that comes back to the entertainment proposition and what happens at not only on the field but around the ground, and also making sure that the players are, you know, as excited, playing exciting cricket, big stars and big names. So certainly, you know, developing Australian players is a really important part of the BBL, and also competing for the talent from around the world with the best players. But as I said, first and foremost, we're about connecting with families and kids and bringing them into the game.
Alistair, you're comfortable with the expansion to three international players in each of the franchises this year?
I think it's been one of the highlights of the season has been not only expanding to three players, but the quality of the players that our clubs have been able to recruit. You know, I think almost every team has had, you know, at least one or two, and in some cases three players that have consistently won Player of the Match awards and brought another element. I think we saw, particularly probably from Boxing Day onwards, when a number of the players from the England team were free from quarantine and entered the competition, and it really kicked into another level. So, you know, I think the group of international players we've had this year is probably the best we've had in five or six seasons. And turn it on its head a bit, I think.
Sorry, Alistair, just jumping in there quickly. Can you imagine what it'd be like with Indian players allowed to play in the Big Bash?
Oh, there's no doubt that would bring an even you know, bigger or different look to the competition. It's something we thought about, and we'd love to consider. It's not on the cards necessarily at the moment. We're really happy. Obviously, lots of players from England have joined the competition and brought a new element, and particularly the Scorchers. You can see that the depth that's brought to their squad. So, but absolutely, the best players from around the world are still all our targets.
One last one before we let you go, Alistair. Tip for this Big Bash final series?
Oh, look, I think it's the way the final five, the structure of it these days, you have to go with the first or second team. I think even though the Sixers finished on top, I think that the form that the Scorchers are in and the prospect of even playing one final at Optus Stadium will make them incredibly hard to beat. They're a deep squad with lots of talent. So it's going to be really tight. I think it's a fascinating final five with five teams that could win it. But I think if you had to pick one, I think the Scorchers are going to be tough to beat.
Alistair, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday morning. All the best over the next couple of weeks in the lead-up to the BBL final.
No worries at all. Great to chat.
Yesterday, but last night, Brett Robinson was our men's 2021 10,000-metre champion in the Zatopek, one of the most famous ATHS races. We talk about it every year here on The Breakfast Club, and he joins us on the line. Brett, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What's it like waking up after 10,000 metres the night before? Because I know you do a lot of marathon running as well. What's the body feel like at 25 past 7 the morning after?
Very rusty. I'm pretty stiff this morning, and my heels are pretty beat up. They got all cut up last night from the spikes I wear, so not walking too well this morning.
So what will you do this morning for your recovery? Or did you complete some of that last night? We know guys jump in ice bars if they've been playing cricket or footy. Then they might do a session at the beach. What does it look like for you?
To be honest, I had to do drug testing last night, so I did a bit of a warm down, but just easy jog, but not much. Probably not doing the right things, to be honest. I had a burger for dinner and then had a few beers, so it's probably not the best, to be honest.
It's a good way to celebrate a famous win. What do you like running on the track? Because I know you do a lot of marathon running as well, and that's obviously your Olympic game too. But in terms of being on the track itself, do you pull up any differently? And do you enjoy it more than the road, or is it more fun out in the open?
I prefer the road. I came up through my junior ranks and all the way through doing track races, and I've just gone to the road the last few years. But I don't know, doing 25 laps is never fun. I think 10K in a straight line or around a city is a lot more entertaining. I prefer doing on the track and on the road. I pull up a lot better from the road. I don't know, the shoes we wear are a bit more cushioned than what we wear on the track.
You happy with the time? 28 flat's pretty good. Is that your best?
I've run 2 seconds quicker, so it's a long way to run to just miss your PB by 2 seconds. I was happy with it. It wasn't the best conditions out there, and to be honest, it's just about getting the win. As a Zatopek, national championship, so you just got the time is irrelevant, really.
Is that reflective of your form at the moment? That you feel like you're in career best form?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I think, I could run a bit quicker in a well-paced race. So I'm definitely going in the right directions, and hopefully, when the Olympics is on, I'll be in even better form.
So the Olympic qualifying time is 27:28, so you're about 30 seconds off it at this stage. Do you reckon you can get down there, and what's the main goal for, hopefully, Tokyo, assuming it goes ahead, what's the main goal for you?
Yeah, I think I can get around that 10K time, but to be honest, I'm focused on the marathon, so it's not really in my sights trying to chase the 10K time. I'll just, assuming it goes ahead in a few months, I'll just in my training up for building up to do a full marathon at the Olympics.
We know so much of the Olympics is about peaking at the right time. Where are you at in your training regime now, and how hard has it been to obviously readjust from the postponement last year?
Yeah, obviously it was pretty hard last year when there was that unknown of not knowing what's happening, and when everything got cancelled, you're like, okay, I'll just get ready for another race, and then that got cancelled. So there's a lot of like kind of just in limbo for a bit, just in a holding pattern. At the moment I'm just kind of still in that holding pattern and just waiting. Like you can't just do marathon training all year round because it's very hard on your body. So I'm just getting through training, like focusing on my speed a bit, and then probably about 12 weeks out from the marathon, from the Olympics, I'll then like really start ramping it up and increasing my long runs and stuff like that.
So that's the absolute goal, heading there, doing the marathon. What hope do you have internally? What's the fire for really getting a medal at the Olympics?
Yeah, I think for me, like a top eight performance would be like really good. The marathon's really strong right now around the world, just with the Kenyans and Ethiopians. So like when you think there's three of them and they're from each country, it's pretty hard to get a medal, let alone a top eight. But if I could be around that top eight, that'd be, I think, a huge result.
Yeah, fantastic. So what do you do, Brett, away from the athletics track or running out on the road? Is this your full-time dedication, or are you able to study in between or anything like that? I know you're into your late 20s now. What do you get up to away from the track?
I do a bit of coaching outside, so just running coaching. Me and a couple of guys I've trained with, we set up our own running coaching business. So pretty much just it's either training or then just telling people what to do for training is pretty much my life.
Fantastic, Brett. All the best for the build-up to the Tokyo Games. Fingers crossed it all goes ahead as planned, which we've heard over the last couple of days. Good news for all the athletes with something to aspire to later in the year. And congratulations yesterday on winning the Zatopek, one of our most famous races.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
The Breakfast Club's got the early mail.
I have to apologise, Bryce. Your promo didn't last for too long. It was an extraordinary day last Wednesday where we got the place all up from Nick Ryan, all three, and that paid beautifully. And then we had another winner as well on the day. And then the very next day, Scotty Gullen comes out and goes bang, bang, and gets two wins for us. So, yeah.
It's been a good summer.
Oh, it has
the
been.
Early mail.
Very fruitful.
Very, very worth
over
following.
Over the last 3 or 4 years, this has clearly been our best summer. We've had a few of Dean's roughies on Friday get up as well. So we've been absolutely on fire here on the Breakfast Club. So hopefully...
Dean is white hot at the moment.
Yeah, I know.
Follow
I know.
Him.
I know. Well, I hope
I'm sure everyone is.
The bank account's doing very nicely too.
Yeah.
Hopefully the boys can continue it next week. Half and Whitey to return on Monday. Let's head down to Geelong, racing there this afternoon. And James Dalton joins us. James, good morning.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
We're going terrific. Well. I'm always glad to talk to you when it doesn't look like there's too much rain about. So what's the weather doing a little later on today, and how's the track come up?
Yeah, not too bad at all. The weather's cloudy for most of the day, and there's a fairly strong southerly pushing in today. Top temperature about 23, so not too hot. Track's come up a good four. Penetrometer's 5.30. We put on 5 millimetres of irrigation last night, which made up 41.5 millimetres for the week, and we just had 2 millimetres of rain a couple of nights ago, so not as much as what we were originally expecting.
So in terms of an upgrade later today, do you reckon we'll get one at all, or it'll probably stay in that good four range?
No, there could potentially be one, and with the twilight start, we start a little bit later, so I'm still going to put on 3 millimetres of irrigation when track work finishes. Just for
yep.
It'll take 2 hours. That's just something we do, just so it doesn't get too firm. So without that irrigation, we definitely go to a good three, but I want to put that on just to make sure we're in the four for majority of the day. That's the plan.
Brilliant. Thanks, James. All the best for later on this afternoon, 3:40 the first. Can't wait.
Thanks, boys.
There we go. Twilight meeting today at Geelong. Forgot about that. 3:40 the first, Bryce, on a good four. So playing beautifully for this afternoon's racing. Hopefully we can get Scotty off that promo and bump you back onto it so you can stay on for next week when the boys return.
Well, we're going to be able to do that this morning with Jodie Thompson. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Jodie, you've got a couple of good runners today. And Quantrell is a maiden. And for a six-year-old stallion, lightly raced, but tends to run into the second place a fair bit as well. Do you think today will be that opportunity to break through?
Oh, look, hoping so. He should be around the mark, I would think.
Now, he's in race four at number two, just for our listeners there. He's come back from a spell and ran second, which, as I mentioned, he's been used to doing. Today, where will you see the improvement in him?
Oh, look, just natural improvement. It had been, you know, 6 months probably since his last run, 5 or 6 months. He was pretty. He'd had a few jump outs and that here at Kilmore and Kyneton before Kilmore. You know, realistically, Hawks' horse is probably too good. But he'll be around the mark. Hopefully, he can just slide across. We took the winkers off him today, so, you know, look, he'll go forward. I won't say we'll lead for sure. I'll leave it up to Teo. Obviously, drawn a bit of a tricky gait. But this time in, he seems a little bit more mature, so I think he might. Last time in, you know, he just wanted to over-race a couple of times. That was probably what got him beat. This time he seems to be just a little bit more tractable on the track and that. So hopefully he'll just settle a little bit better. And he'll be there somewhere in the finish, I think.
Jody, has he been a bit quirky, just given that he's had 8 race starts and he's a 6-year-old? Is he had some difficulty early on?
No, look, nothing. Just was broken in late and... give him a bit of time.
That's all right. Some of us guys need that. We need a bit of time to mature and to get a bit better. You've also got another runner in race 5, number 2, Double Dink.
Yep.
What can you tell? Good form. Come off a spell and a win.
Yep. Look, I actually, it was a pretty tough win the other day because we thought he could win. Like, we sort of tried to place him here at Kilmore pretty, you know, they were pretty up to the mark anyway, but I thought on the corner it looked like, you know, that he was gone, and then he sort of kicked again and he was getting away on the post. So I was pretty happy with that, really. Obviously, again, natural improvement. He'd been, I can't remember which one of them, one was 5 and one was 6 months from when they'd raced. But, you know, obviously Stokes' horse is probably a bit better than a little homebred of ours, but realistically, he'll sort of... I'd say he'd bounce and be right there. He'll take advantage of the barrier one, I'd say. You know, but again, he's pretty tractable horse. He doesn't have to lead.
Well, that's good.
If he doesn't want to, you know.
Well, that's good. You've got a couple of real handy runners. What do you think it would be your best today, Jody?
I'd probably nearly say Quantrell, if he can get a good run in transit. Just the tricky gate's going to make it. The other horse, he'll be, you know, I'd be happy if we run second to Dose's horse, but realistically, it's probably better than us.
There we go. Thanks, Jody. All the best for racing later on today at Geelong.
No worries. Thank you.
Jody Thompson joining us there. Her best of the day, Quantrell, race 4, number 2. Nice juicy each-way odds, too.
Yeah, Double Dink after having a win.
Yeah.
At $12 as well. Yep. Good each-way odds.
I reckon both of them each-way might be the play. Mate, you know what? I'm going to make a captain's call here. Do you want to get the place all up again? It worked last week.
Hey, it worked. Our Wednesday special.
We'll get a bit of value too.
Yes, we will.
All right, let's get the place all up. Race 4, number 2, into race 5, number 2. Quantrell into Double Dink. Hopefully we can get a race-to-race place.
We're
maybe
right
even a race-to-race win. And we'll get that on the promo. Be a nice long one again for John the Carp.
RSN Summer Breakfast Club.